C7. Number 13A.
Yeah? Shall we go on with this soul? Just to begin to reason things out, what happens, you know, if there is only one dominion. Well, if there is only one dominion in soul, what happens in the physical realm, in soul, where we feel that soul has to do, the counterfeit sense of soul has to do with body and with the mortal body and it's a physiological body, with bodybuilding, and so we begin to see that as we feel that soul must have dominion in the physical realm, that we begin to see that the body cannot give anything, any dignity to men, that the body does not help us to be men, that that even we can lose a finger or an arm or anything, that does not really take anything away from the identity called man. That body does not constitute any more man. And when we see that body does not constitute man, does not, bring forth the integrity of man, the dignity of man, that is absolutely independent of it, then we see that which really gives us dignity and which really gives us the stature of manhood is not body but spiritual understanding. That identifies us as men. That what we entertain spiritually is our true spiritual body. And so somehow the education of the spiritual understanding comes up. But in the measure that we lose a sense that we should care for the body, and only by caring for the body we are a better man and a better sense of man and a more dignified man and more in a man of greater integrity, you see, so that everything has its proper place on that body, that we don't lose our hair and nothing like that, not one hair is lost, or else we are already downcast and feel, well, we have lost our manhood and things like that, that we begin to realize that the identity, the integrity, the dignity, the structure, the measure of manhood is something that has to do how to educate ourselves spiritually. That gives a charisma, that gives a radiation of soul, which makes man, so that we judge suddenly man not according to his nose and to his eyes, but according to the radiation, the charisma, the aura of a man's stature. Or if we go to principle, we begin to see in principle that truth being omnipotent in the physical realm means that therefore not physical theories, not human theories, not human authorities, not human sciences are actually that which make up the physical realm. But as truth has authority over them, only then really another science can grow up. Then we begin to see that it has dominion in the spiritual realm, that we put all our education into the academic education, into academics of the right sort, she speaks here, and shows that we give now to the scientific investigation a spiritual tone. So we have a great sense of academic education taking place, of the right sort. See, as long as we think that our whole being, as our whole body, is just governed by physiological principles, by biological principles, by hereditary principles, we just feel, All right, well, we are what we are. What can we do? I cannot change the theory of biology and cannot change the theory of heredity, and I cannot change the theory of the whole organism and the nervous system and everything. I can't do anything. But if we see that truth is omnipotent also in that physical realm, then we say, all right, then something else must take its place. Then another kind of theory must take place. Another principle must be studied. I must see the spiritual activity of a principle. Then I begin to see the spiritual science, devote myself to a spiritual science, and see that spiritual science is that which brings me anywhere, that is that which will govern me, and therefore will dominate the body. See, I feel if we have a body and if we feel that our whole health is dependent on an independent or a physiological principle, well, what can we do against it? But if we feel, oh no, that physiological principle is governed actually by a spiritual principle, then I say, all right, then let me study that spiritual principle. Let that spiritual principle have dominion over the physiological principle. And I feel that anyone who is interested in the science of spirit and studies the Christian science for the science sake, not for results sake, but for science sake, he's very healthy. He's quite a toughie. He doesn't have constantly to make a demonstration over. I've made my demonstration over. And afterwards I have to make a demonstration over. And after a quarter of a year I have to make my demonstration over. He shouldn't always have to make a demonstration over. He lives and moves and has his being in a system of ideas. And that has dominion in the spiritual and in the material. It isn't, you know, sometimes I nearly go up the walls, you know. One presents the science of Christian science in its structure, in its system, in its categories, and I don't know what, you know, and presents it and sees the beauty of it, and the students may like it, and then at the end of it they come and say, I wish you could show me how to apply it. How do you apply it? I would like to see the practical side of it. Well, what can you do? You know? They have a belief that there is a principle somewhere in the air and then somewhere a life and an existence somewhere else. What can you do? It's hopeless, you see. You have to give up. You have to give up. They can't see that if thought is in line with the system of science, with the science of being, that it's a science of being. How can you apply being to something else? Being is being. It's the greatest theory and the greatest practice in one. You can't separate any more theory and practice. You can almost separate consciousness from experience. This is the very first thing we learn in Christian science, that consciousness is experience. So if we have a different consciousness, we have a different experience. There is nothing to be applied to. It's our very being. That's why I feel that whole sense of having to take the principle of Christian science and apply that somewhere to some corner of the world or to some corner of the body and to some part of the body is an old mystical sense of Christian science practice. How can you apply something which is all in all to some kind of a corner, to some kind of a part somewhere? The whole science is a science of that covers the whole, the one being. Therefore, it is the most practical thing that is possible to investigate that science. It's consciousness, and consciousness determines experience. And so, as we go on in the investigation of Christian science as a science, that whole sense how to apply it and how to practice it is just going out, because it's an obsolete question. We only have that sense of how do you use it, how do you apply it, show me how to apply it, is only a question which comes up as long as one has, as one approaches Christian Science through arguments in an atomistic way. Then you can do that. If you have arguments, you have parts, little parts. Then you can treat parts, and you can throw one part to the next part and try if it does any good to it or not. But in the structure of Christian Science, you just have that structure. And consciousness is experience. We cannot separate them. It's impossible. Yeah, it's terrific. That sense of physiology is terrific because it really shows us, you know, that if we study truth for truth's sake, then it takes care of the spiritual realm and of the physical realm, because it's one realm. And so we move into a rhythm of the system of being, and that's investigating the principle of that science, and at the same time it's the practice of it. Because what we establish in consciousness has its effect in the spiritual and in the material. Can you see the place value of this chapter? And can you see that what is a practitioner in the ordinary sense? Is one that studies the lesson sermons for a quarter of an hour or half an hour or perhaps an hour. And the rest of the time it's used to throw this truth at patients. He uses up all the rest of their time to apply that what he has learned. A scientist would be quite different. He lives and moves and has his being from morning to night in the investigation and contemplation and adoration and of the system, and that's the system. There is no other system. He doesn't have to throw that truth to somebody. He doesn't have to throw that to a body, to an organ. I think we students must get clear about that. Or we park the old sense of Christian Science into this new science of Christian Science and say, with this new sense of Christian Science, I can practice better. You can't practice better. Better. Can we practice a law of mathematics better? Can 2 and 2 equal 4 be practiced better or not so good? There's no better and worse. 2 and 2 is 4, and that's 4. Finished. You can't practice it better. Either the truth is true or it isn't true. But there is no better truth and the worse truth. You know, it gives a different attitude to the whole life of a Christian Scientist. Well, somewhere I got off the line and on a tangent. I think it was in principle. In life, she would show, you see, that life is omnipotent in the physical realm. In the physical realm, just says you can't really have a better life by caring more for your body. Think of some people that spend hours each day to care for the body. They see that it has the right food, the right air, the right exercise, the right thing. And so I'm not against wisdom. I'm very much for common sense. And I'm very much for having fresh air and doing some exercises and not get bodily rigid on this human plane. I'm quite for some kind of common sense. As long as we are here, and we can't yet say, well, I can do it without air and without food and without drinking and so on. Jesus could do it for a few moments in the grave. He had to do it, and perhaps we would be able to do it if we were forced to the utmost. But let's be normal. But that is not the question. The question is, do we think that we get more life by caring for the body? And that would be wrong. It has no, we would have no dominion over our life by caring more for the body and through all that kind of things. But if we see that life has dominion over the body, then naturally we begin to see that in the spiritual realm, that this would lead us always to have an improved sense, a higher sense, really an exalted sense of things, where we see we don't live by the body, we live by the spirit. Or in truth, you have that very clearly brought out in Mrs. Eddy's writing, that God is omnipotent in the realm of medicine, in the realm of healing, in the realm of disease, in the realm of sickness and of problems, that she really says, there is no truth in drugs, there is no truth in material remedies. That the truth comes out where? In the spiritual realm. There we have man's spiritual capacities and possibilities are enlarged through consciousness. It's a great sense that we gain the stature of manhood through consciousness. Through consciousness we enlarge our capacities, we enlarge our possibilities, we enlarge man's abilities and power. And by golly, we can. It's always like that, that usually we have to do the very thing we are not destined to do humanly. That we are put into a position where we have to accomplish something and have to have ability of something which we didn't get from birth, which was not put into our cradle, as we say. But there we have to rely on that the Christ truth has all faculties and the Christ truth will have enough abilities that we can, through consciousness, have dominion over all our shortcomings. So don't feel that you don't have certain abilities necessary to fulfill a job. We all have them, anyone that we need. We come never into a situation where we are not equipped to do what we have to do. Or in love, naturally, here we have a sense that we must have a sense over that belief that everything ends in evil, that everything ends in extinction, in condemnation, in curse, in frustration, that everything goes down the drain after all, that everybody's life is quite happy and jolly and has a little bit of an upward trend, but finally it all goes down into dust and that's the end of it. You see, this is what the belief is in the physical realm. Now, if we see that that is not the plan of love, that that is not in the line of love, that that is not the sense of fulfillment, that that is not the measure for fulfillment, that the measure of fulfillment is something very different. And so we get some kind of dominion in the spiritual, where we just can see that love is always blessing us, love is always leading us, always glorifying us, that that is our destiny, then we have dominion over that whole sense that life comes from dust and ends with dust, and in between we get some kick out of life and that's all. Well, I guess that's all what I could say about this chapter. Let's take Footsteps of Truth. And let's see what claim is here in regard to dualism and what is the sense of oneness. Actually, it builds on the preceding chapter, which said that truth is omnipotent in both realms. Are there two realms? Are there two realms of consciousness? The moment I ask this, are there two realms of consciousness about which I can be conscious? Take thought or take no thought? Are there two realms? I'm touching the chapter on consciousness. And you can see at once I'm touching the chapter on consciousness and I'm touching the Christ as science. And see, what kind of a consciousness should I have? Or, if it is the Christ, what is the Christ impulsion that is necessary so that I have only one consciousness? The great question is that there are footsteps of truth, and you could say to yourself, well, has truth footsteps? Is truth not just what it is? Does 2 and 2 equal 4 have footsteps? Or is it just a fact? And so, Mrs. Eddy would show that in this chapter that we must consider it as 2 parts. The one part, the first part, would show us truth, the form of truth, the form of consciousness of truth, and then in the second part would show how that form of the consciousness of truth would bring forth in the human footsteps leading to truth. The duality here, therefore, is the belief that there are 2 realms of consciousness, the divine consciousness and the human consciousness. The divine consciousness, that is, the consciousness of truth, the human consciousness, which would have footsteps leading to truth. It is as if she would compare the aim and the way to it, say, is there an aim, is there a way to it, or are both the same? If there is an aim, and if there is a way, we have a duality. How can that be reconciled? So, her sense of oneness, which she brings out here, is therefore showing that actually there is not a divine and a human consciousness, that there is actually only consciousness. But that consciousness is the same consciousness no matter if I consider it as being the consciousness in the spiritual realm or if I consider it as a consciousness in the human realm. It's still the same consciousness. Meaning what? Usually we have a belief in duality. Usually we have the belief which will say, yes, there is God, there is a divine realm, but I'm not yet there. I'm still in the human. That's duality. You have a divine realm and a human realm. Are there 2 realms? Are there 2 consciousnesses? Or is there just 1 consciousness? And what she wants to bring out is that there is only 1 consciousness, and that consciousness is that the divine is human, and the human is divine. That in that consciousness we cannot separate between the divine and the human. That consciousness is consciousness no matter if I'm living in hell or in heaven. If I would make my bed in hell, thou art there, says the Bible somewhere, showing that actually what we call divine and human are our division, but not God's division of consciousness. There is not a divine consciousness and a human consciousness. There is only consciousness, And we must see that that consciousness, according to how we translate it to a level, that it is called divine consciousness, translated to another consciousness, that divine consciousness is a human consciousness. But it's still the same consciousness. And I think this is a great point. She makes it rather clear in some of her writings in Unity of Good. She has two quite explicit renderings. For instance, she says in Unity of Good, she says, human beings are physically mortal, but spiritually immortal. This is the answer. She says, human beings are either physically mortal, but also spiritually immortal. They are both. They are not two things. Human beings are human beings, and that's one thing. No matter if I call it that they are physically mortal, or if I call them they are spiritually immortal. Being is being. But if I look at it in a wrong way, I call that very thing, I call it a physical mortal. And if I look at it at the same thing from another standpoint, I call it spiritually immortal. Or another statement. He says in Unity of Good, the more I understand true humanhood, the more I see it to be sinless, as ignorant of sin as is the perfect maker. So suddenly the human is sinless. Or she says, Jesus was divinely human. Can you see how she plays with these 3 degrees? She plays with these 3 degrees of the physical, the human, and the spiritual, and saying, are they actually 3 realms? If there are 3 realms, we have duality. Or is it 1 realm? That's the question.